Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Board, it was always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
Rich the Education Gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face, in your face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching, cause here's the Education Gadfly Show. Yeah. It's the Education.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Here with my co-host, a man who is a card-carrying member of the American Educational Research Association, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, babe?
I'm well. How are you, Rick?
Doing well.
So I bring that up today, your membership in AERA, because it has come to light that a certain Bill Ayers is soon to take office as one of that organization's vice presidents. He was elected at the meeting in March. And, you know, as has been reported in the press recently, Bill Ayers is a former unrepentant terrorist, you know, who used to blow people up. And now he's going to be the vice president of this organization.
Did he ever blow people up? I thought he just blew buildings up.
I think he's been implicated in several bombings, and it was on the Lamb, and then Statue of Limitations.
Is this Kuhner like, oh, he's been implicated? No, wait a minute.
He was definitely in the Weather Underground.
Okay,
and basically hasn't denied that he was involved
up.
In blowing stuff up.
And he had his famous 2001 quote.
And he was quoted in 2001 basically saying he wishes that they had blown more buildings up. So, as a member of AERA, I'm just wondering if you think this is a good idea to have, you know, one of its leaders be a terrorist.
You mean part of your crusade to have the...
Well, I mean, you've been giving me a hard time about this all week,
sure.
Rick, because I posted
There's two questions. Is it a good idea? No. I mean, I don't like Bill Ayers's arguments. I don't like his particular take on social justice. I think I've argued with him over the years. I think I've banged on his stuff more than one occasion.
Well, that has nothing to do with the fact that he's a terrorist. I mean, yes, AERA elects all kinds of people with dumb ideas to their leadership.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you were going to say you can't elect people with dumb ideas to the leadership of AERA, they probably would have nobody to elect except for you, Rick.
Well, if you're saying that he's convicted and he's a felon sitting in jail right now, I have a real problem with a convicted felon sitting in jail being vice president of AERA.
Because he was on the Lamb and you know, just kept
out
of it.
He's been convicted?
No, he was on the Lamb. The FBI was after him for years, and then they never got him. And I think what statute of limitations or something. He walked.
So he's never been convicted in a court of law.
He's never denied.
You want a voluntary association.
All right, but you agree that if you want strong evidence that this guy was a terrorist, that he shouldn't be vice president of AERA.
No, that's still not good enough. Strong evidence.
What do you want?
I mean, it's a question of, do I want, because people are trying to score points in a political season, to suggest that, you know, bring pressure on an organization to push this guy out. He's been in the organization probably 25 years.
He got elected vice president in March.
But he's been part of it was fine for him to be a member of AERA. You didn't mind that?
Well, I guess that wasn't so great. But it's worse that he's going to be a leader of the organization. Well, Kobe is telling us that we need to get going. But you know what? This is good, Rick. I like the fact that you're standing up there defending terrorists. That's good.
If that's what you want to call it. I like to call it defending a Tocquevillian principle, freedom of association. It's somewhere in the First Amendment.
Okay. Well, tell you again, we started right away on the podcast today. Well, we do have a busy show, though. Pardon the Gadfly, Outrage of the Week, Education News of the Weird, lots to cover. Let's get started. Christina, falling off her chair. Let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Sorry, it was that scintillating argument. Topic one.
Was she mocking
I think that Christina is just bored with us.
I can't say I blame her. I get bored with us.
But I am very eager to discuss these topics. So let's go. Anne Arundel County is supposedly suspending too many black students, so it's giving special training to its teachers so they can better understand how different races of students will behave. Black students, the teachers learn, will generally be more confrontational because this stance is learned in their neighborhoods. Rick, is this a fantastic discipline policy?
Christina, I got a feeling you're not an unbiased party on this question here. How do you feel about it?
I'm not supposed to talk after the intro.
No, it's not a fantastic discipline policy. I think it's an unfortunate and wrong-headed discipline policy. Mike?
And why is that, Rick?
I'm not a real big fan of accepting or encouraging unacceptable behavior simply because of the color of somebody's skin.
So is this kind of like the Ebonics of the discipline debate?
It's a nice question. You know, I mean, actually, right? I mean, this is arguably significantly worse because Ebonics simply said, well, we're going to teach them a different approach to reading and speaking because of the color of their skin, which is wrongheaded and short-sighted in its own part. This is actually worse because it says we're going to excuse behaviors that nobody thinks are acceptable because they live in certain neighborhoods or the color of their skin. I mean, talk about the bigotry of low expectations.
Okay, but if you dig into the article that came out of Baltimore, what seemed to be happening also is that the teachers were going to be trained on, you know, the kids' backgrounds. They're going to try to be more sensitive culturally. They're going to try to learn how to intervene early in these discipline problems. I mean, that's all legitimate, right?
It's all legitimate until you say, well, look, I've got black students who come from this part of the city here. I've got white students from there. So therefore, I'm going to have differential standards on how they're allowed to speak, how they're allowed to behave. I mean, this is the problem with multiculturalism run amok, is once it's fine to be sensitive and it's fine to say we're going to appreciate distinctions. But at what point do you say we're going to tolerate behaviors from somebody that we're not going to tolerate from somebody else?
Interesting. Okay. Although you seem to be willing to tolerate the behavior of Bill Ayers, who tried to blow people up. Very interesting. Okay.
Oof, Mike, you are auditioning for Right Wing Radio as we speak.
Next. A piece in the Atlantic Monthly by an anonymous college professor argues that too many students in college shouldn't be there. Some students, the author writes, are not even prepared for high school, let alone college. Mike, are too many kids going to higher ed?
Well, it's not just kids, Christina. You know, if you read this article, which you have to go out and buy the magazine right now because it's still not online. It did go online today. Never mind. Sorry. The web moves fast. So you can now go online and read this article. It's quite good. It actually talks about a lot of mature adults going into these courses because their jobs, for one reason or another, require them to get some college credit. So you've got, for example, state troopers who are trying to get some college credit. You got other mid-career people. And it's very clear they get into these courses, they are not at all prepared. I mean, they probably shouldn't have ever gotten a high school diploma. They can't even do high school work. They clearly can't do college work. And this professor tries to maintain a standard and he ends up failing a significant portion of them. But the main policy point here is that all this happy talk about every child college ready and everybody a college graduate is ridiculous. That the only way you're going to get there is if you lower the standards in college. And for what purpose?
You know, since we're in AP season, I mean, this actually goes to the problem with this vast push to democratize advanced placement and even, you know, some talk of trying to do that with international baccalaureate. Is there's a reality out there, which is the more kids you push into these AP classes, the reality is that not all of them are going to be prepared. Unless teachers are going to flunk large numbers of kids, teachers are going to move more slowly. They're going to cover stuff in less depth. Courses are going to be less challenging. And it's the same thing we see. We've seen this throughout the 20th century with college. The more people go to college, the more you need to get another degree to separate yourself from the pack. So you get degree inflation. And the more you get concerns that professors and teachers have incentives to water down their content and what they're teaching to make sure that they don't have to fail too many students. It's a darn problem.
I agree.
Whoa. That was very soulful. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about Bill Ayers, Mike?
I think he should not be the vice president of the AARA.
And this is because why?
Terrorist.
Right. Now, let's talk about D.C.'s own resident, not terrorist, but crackhead. Marion Barry wrote an op-ed in the Washington nice. Post in support of D.C.'s voucher program. Rick, is this a useful endorsement?
So, Christina, I like these carefully framed, very Kuhner-like questions today. I like I think it's certainly more useful than it was when Barry was in the middle of getting convicted of felonious behavior. Actually, the piece he wrote in the Post, I thought, made a reasonably coherent argument, which was like, look, he was acknowledging the fact that he that there's good reasons to give kids choices. It's a shame he actually didn't have this stance when he was mayor of D.C. Mm-hmm. and when it could have actually made a real difference.
Now, look, I mean, it was actually a well-written piece. And what he said was, hey, if this program took money away from public schools, then I would be against it. But this is a program where the money comes entirely from the federal government. And if we agree to it, we get extra money for public schools and for charter schools. So I'm now for it. And tells a story about being convinced by somebody in his ward who, you know, low-income parent who's taken advantage of it and loves it. Still, not so great to get the endorsement from a former crackhead mayor.
Well, I mean, the other part here is this goes exactly to the competition argument. So anybody who expects D.C. schools to unleash competition when the argument for them is, look, we get lots of free stuff if we let people have some choice. Where's the competition coming from again?
Right. Those people are on crack.
The dum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum. Okay, that's all the time we have for Pardon the gadfly. Jeff Kuhner, what do you think? Do you like Marion Barry?
I'm not a big fan of Marion Barry, Mike. I mean, to me, guys who... Well, I mean, guys who are caught smoking crack pipes with prostitutes while they're the mayor of a city, they just don't quite do it for me.
Well, let's stick to the script here. Tell us, what's your outrage of the week? Let me guess. Some sex scandal in some corner of the world?
No, Mike, well, you nailed it. It's an outrageous story from down under. If you thought the only things that, you know, Australia gave us were Crocodile Dundee and kangaroos, I got news for you and the listeners out there. There is a serious pornography problem pervading Australia, in particular in the Aboriginal communities. A very disturbing story from the Australian newspaper. Apparently, literally, there is such an epidemic of pornography that many of these classes in these Aboriginal communities are now facing young boys and young girls as young as 7 years old simulating sexual acts in the classroom because they've been watching mommy and daddy looking at porn all night. And I mean, there's incidents described in the article of literally a seven-year-old girl pulling her pants down, simulating sexual acts. It's, Mike, it's disturbing. And here's the real outrage here, Mike. It's not just that these parents are allowing their children to be subjected to this kind of adult porn. It's that you have these welfare case officers. When the teachers were alarmed at this disturbing behavior, they went to the welfare case officers and said, not only do I think there's porn in the house, these children may be victims of child abuse. And what did the welfare case officers say? I kid you not. There's no problem, mate. There's absolutely no problem. Literally, it's not a sign of sex child abuse. So it's okay for children to watch porn. It is absolutely outrageous. And Mike, I've pointed this out in a blog posting. I think these welfare case officers, if they're not going to be there to defend the children, they should be fired. And I think they should be prosecuted for aiding and abetting certain examples of child sex abuse, because a lot of these police officers who've been looking into this think some of these children could be victims of molestation.
Okay.
It's a very, very sad story, and it's truly outrageous, Mike.
Thank you. Jeff Kuhner with his education outrage of the week. Whew.
Oof.
I tell you, it is hard to hear stories like that, but you know, but thankfully for a lot of us, Jeff goes, he searches the globe to find these outrageous stories.
Well, I was going to say that what's unfortunate is in this case, Jeff had to rely upon a newspaper account rather than his sources on the ground.
Yes, that's true. Well, and don't think he doesn't have sources on the ground in the Aboriginal culture within Australia. I'm sure that he does, and maybe we'll hear from them in future weeks. Oh, gosh, I don't know. But Jeff, seriously, it's outrageous, but it's so depressing to listen to this stuff that maybe next week you could, I don't know, lighten it up a little.
Well, I did get concerned at the end. I thought he was going to suggest that this was grounds for an American invasion of our ally Australia.
Yeah.
I was glad that he actually restricted himself to only suggest the firing of various public officials.
That's right. Okay. Jeff Kuhner's Pink Slip of the Week. Kobe, we need some music for that one. Just keep that in mind. Well, whew, thankfully we made it through that one. And it is now that time we've been waiting for all podcast long and all week long. It's Education News of the Weird Time. With our specially weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what is weird this week?
Mike, a new just-released education study reveals that young children tend to think other children with glasses look smart. Jeffrey Walling, assistant professor of optometry at Ohio State, and the study's lead author said, quote, "If the impression of looking smarter will appeal to a child, I would use that information and tell the child it is based on research," unquote. Walling's analysis also found that kids wearing glasses look more honest to other kids. Other trends emerged too. Both boys and girls thought boys appeared to be better at playing sports, and both boys and girls thought the opposite gender looked more shy. But back to the glasses. According to Walline, quote, "The concern about attractiveness with glasses seems to be more internal to a particular child rather than an indicator of how they'll feel about other people who wear glasses." Got that?
Got it.
Listeners can read more in the May issue of the Journal of Ophthalmic and Physiological Optics. And that's Education News of the Weird.
So what I want to know was whether or not this study was paid for by the eyeglass industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you know, oh no, look, kids, you might feel bad about yourself for wearing glasses, but nobody else actually thinks badly for wearing glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you wear glasses when you were young?
No, I think I started when I was teaching.
Okay.
Actually.
That's same. You know, I started wearing glasses in my 20s. I had a hard time seeing distance and things. And, but, you know, I have to admit that when I used to work for the U.S. Department of Education and I would go out and speak around the country and I was, I don't know, in my late 20s at the time and looked like I was about 16, that I found that if I put my glasses on, it made me look a little bit older and people didn't scoff at me quite so much.
This is why the receding hairline works for you, too.
That works as well. It did. Actually, the receding hairline worked a lot. One time I told Checker how I was having a hard time, you know, feeling like speaking to these audience. They looked at me like I was a kid, and Checker said, you know, Mike, that's not so much of a problem for you anymore. I think that was true.
Yeah. That's what you got to love about Checker's love and support.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Until next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.